From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, September 27th through Friday, October 1st, 2021. Stand by as we're about to embark upon a bold hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, during which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got lefties, righties, and well-meaning fence-sitters waiting in the wings to tickle your brain with notions, potions, and emotions. Try not to get angry. Just listen and maintain an appropriate amount of educated skepticism. We'll hear from our medical correspondent, Dr. Dahlia Wax, in Las Vegas, discussing how the vaccine mandates are impacting healthcare professionals working in our overburdened hospitals. Talk host and owner of our Phoenix affiliate, KFNX, Bill Brady, talking about Kyrsten Sinema from the conservative perspective in her home state. Leading syndicated progressive radio talk show host Tom Hartman in Portland, Oregon, with a completely opposite point of view. And longtime radio talk show host, Guardian Angels founder, and GOP New York City mayoral nominee, Curtis Sliwa, discussing what he would do about crime and homelessness if elected. Opinionated yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations as well as the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations in the U.S. and the U.K. A hyperverbal examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media and played out in the theater of your mind. Information is gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcast and trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Fasten your Sea Crane CC earbuds. Speaking of which, this installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap is being sponsored in part by the good folks at Sea Crane, makers and distributors of fine radio and radio-oriented equipment. Visit their website at seacrane.com or give them a call at 800-522-8863. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10, R. Kelly convicted. The pop star was convicted by a federal jury in Brooklyn of being a serial abuser of girls and young women. He was found guilty on one count of racketeering and 8 counts of violating the Mann Act, which prohibits transporting women or girls across state lines for any immoral purpose.
The revelation of his crimes and depravity shed new light on the Me Too movement in the African American community and the conundrum of separating art from the conduct and character of the artist.
At number 9, abortion tied with climate change. The recently enacted strict Texas abortion law, currently under legal scrutiny in federal court, continues to generate alarm and debate over the stability and future of Roe v. Wade, not only in Texas, but all across the nation.
And climate change continues to intensify as a worldwide issue of deep concern as we transition into October and the fall of 2021.
At number 8, race relations tied with voting legislation. State House debates over election regulations continue to spread across the nation.
And the heart of the matter is considered by opponents to be a calculated effort to suppress the African-American vote.
At number 7, a three-way tie between the January 6 investigation, Trump election fraud claims, and the new Stephanie Grisham book. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6 riot issued subpoenas to 11 individuals connected to former President Donald Trump and the pro-Trump group involved in organizing rallies leading up to the insurrection, all while the former president keeps beating the drum that he was robbed of his second term due to widespread election fraud.
Meantime, the new book, I'll Take Your Questions Now, What I Saw at the Trump White House, a tell-all by former Trump press secretary Stephanie Grisham, continues to pile on even more dirt about his temper as well as his conduct on the world stage.
At number 6, a tie between crime and homelessness. These are two major issues driving politics in America's urban centers.
We have an amazing conversation about these topics coming up this hour with New York City GOP mayoral nominee Curtis Sliwa that you do not want to miss.
At number five, immigration reform. More than 70 talk show hosts gathered in Washington, D.C. this week for the 14th annual installment of Hold Their Feet to the Fire, a massive radio row presented by the Federation for American Immigration Reform to bring attention to the border crisis and other immigration problems.
Another example of talk radio's tremendously important role in keeping this hot issue on the front burner of media coverage.
At number four this week, Afghanistan congressional testimony. The Senate held hearings this week on the frenzied and allegedly botched withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan.
Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, and U.S. Central Command Head General Frank McKenzie both told Congress that contrary to President Biden's actions, they personally supported keeping a small number of troops past the withdrawal deadline.
At number three, the economy. Fears of inflation, increasing delays in the supply chain, and a severe labor shortage are contributing to create a tense and uncertain economic climate in the nation.
And the continuing surge of the Delta variant is certainly not making matters better.
At number two, the Biden budget debate, tied with the prospect of a government shutdown. Democratic U.S. Senators Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia are giving the Biden administration headaches as they stand in the way of his $3.5 trillion budget.
Meantime, the House approved a Senate-passed bill to keep the government funded through early December, barely avoiding a government shutdown at midnight on Thursday. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi delayed a vote on President Biden's Senate-passed bipartisan infrastructure bill after a Democratic stalemate remained and negotiations stalled between the wings of the party. The Democrats are in disarray.
And at number one this week, COVID-19 vaccines, boosters, masks, mandates, and politics. The pandemic continues to be the driving force shaping our politics, economics, national mood, and lives.
Stand by for a fascinating and illuminating conversation with our medical correspondent about the painful reality of vaccine mandates hitting home among healthcare professionals at our nation's overburdened hospitals. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged in to the Michael Harrison Wrap. COVID-19 remains in the top position this week as the most talked about subject in the American talk media. Joining us now from Las Vegas, Nevada, is our medical correspondent, a nationally syndicated radio talk show host heard coast to coast every day on the Genesis Communications Network, Dr. Dahlia Wax.
You know, I think what's been happening has been the reality of the mandates are starting to hit us. And we're starting to see what was on paper start to happen in person. And we're seeing hospital systems across the United States having to make good on the firing of their employees. And to fire somebody who busted their butts for 20 months in the pandemic, survived the pandemic, had immunity, came to work despite so many other people not going to work, now being given their walking papers, it's been very somber, scary, and I think some people are starting to kind of rethink what exactly this mandate is.
For those who are not familiar with this syndrome, this process, how does the mandate connect to people being fired from jobs at hospitals?
Even though the government, Biden per se, said he would not, you know, support mandates or want people fired per se, he has deputized workers, especially federal workers, as well as, you know, governors, to then speak to their constituents about improving vaccine compliance. And so as the Build Back Better plan is going to have within the bill sanctions against companies that might not vaccinate employees, many people are already seeing the writing on the wall, and many companies are already mandating vaccines. As a result, however, that would mean if somebody does not want to get the vaccine, they have to choose testing or being fired. And sadly, many of these hospital systems aren't even offering the testing requirement. They are making the mandate such that if you don't have your first dose of a vaccine, as we've seen in New York, as we've seen in other states, then you will be terminated. And so it's one thing to have requisites and prerequisites to get a job and vaccines to get a job. It's another thing to take somebody who has survived the pandemic, has been there, has busted their butt for that community, and fire them, and then have to find a replacement of somebody else from overseas, from wherever, who could have a fake vaccination card for all we know. And so I think the reality is starting to hit people going, we're actually firing people for not getting a vaccine when they could have natural immunity and they want to show their natural immunity. So it's been actually probably, this has been probably one of the scarier times throughout the pandemic that isn't sickness related.
So there is a significant percentage of employees who work in healthcare at hospitals who do not want to be vaccinated. That is a revelation to many.
Frankly, it's a bit
of a surprise. That's very interesting, to say the least.
And it's not a majority. I mean, we're not talking 80%. We're talking small percentages. However, when you have a hospital that's already understaffed and you lose 175 staff members who understand microbiology, they understand healthcare, and, you know, they have their own reasons, their own hesitancy, their own, you know, concerns about it. It's a real big move to say you can't work. And then, of course, in New York, they're talking about they won't have access to unemployment, which is a whole controversy in and of itself. If somebody, you know, is quitting a job on their own, you know, how long do we support them? So I get that there's the controversy, but it's a real big statement that you know, people are making, saying you can't work because of this one choice. And then it starts to make us wonder, you or I who have been vaccinated, are we any day now going to be accused of being unvaccinated because our immunity has waned and we haven't gotten the booster? And so any one of us who thinks we're safe because we're in the majority can very quickly turn into the minority in a heartbeat.
Well, if we suddenly see those who get vaccinated, I assume most of them do it out of an earnest belief that the vaccine will help them. I mean, you've been vaccinated. You wouldn't have done it if you didn't think there was some benefit to it. Or you certainly wouldn't have done it if you thought it would hurt you. I've been vaccinated. I certainly wouldn't have done it. I've even had the booster. I've had three vaccinations. I didn't do it because I'm looking to tempt fate. I have confidence that for the most part, I mean, I realize that everything is flawed and nothing is perfect. But for the most part, the vaccine works. I would just think that a number of people who have already been vaccinated believe that, and therefore, if they suddenly found that their immunization to the COVID is suddenly waning, that they would want to get another vaccine. I don't know. Straighten me out.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, I was just on a campus at UNLV for College Student Health Awareness Day, getting college kids, helping vaccinate college kids and be there to answer your questions. And we got 50 college students who had been hesitant vaccinated. But a big concern they had, and understandably so, was the myocarditis link. I mean, look at what happened in Canada yesterday. In Canada, they urged that young men do not get the Moderna and instead get the Pfizer because of the 1 in 5,000 myocarditis link. Other girls are concerned about the fertility and about the menstrual periods and the change in their gynecological health, and the government is studying that too. So many people are thinking, look, I don't want to tempt fate when I've already had COVID and I have antibodies. And so, you know, it was really interesting and enlightening to me when I was talking to the college students, because a huge majority of them are, you know, hesitant. And then pregnant women, you know, something else that was big in the news is Tylenol safety data is flipping, where we told pregnant women for years Tylenol was safe. And now we're saying, you need to rethink that. So pregnant women are telling me, Dahlia, you're telling me the vaccine is safe in pregnant women. Look at what happened with Tylenol. Are you going to tell me the same thing 20, 30 years from now that I was wrong? And so none of these people are wrong. You know, people who are vaccine hesitant aren't crazy. I mean, they have a lot of them have logic, and I can't argue with a pregnant woman on why they were told that Tylenol was safe and now they aren't, that same thing won't happen with the COVID vaccine. All I could say is, look, you have to go with the knowledge you have now. And I fear China more than I fear Pfizer, and I'd rather get a Pfizer vaccine than deal with a virus that came from China. And but I tell them, I go, look, you know, you're being fearful doesn't mean you're crazy. It means you really care about the fetus. Or, you know, you're concerned about the myocarditis link. But when people hear that, you know, these aren't risk-free, they're saying, why not get natural immunity? Because that's how a lot of the younger generations were trained, to build up your immunity, to sleep well, eat well. You know, don't be a bubble. Don't play video games and be stuck in the basement of your mom's house. Get outside. Be around others. Get sick and build up an immunity. That's how Gen Z and the millennials were raised. So I'm not surprised that many Gen Zs and millennials are like, wait, now you want me to get artificial immunity from a vaccine? So that's kind of what some of the thinking is.
That's medical doctor and radio talk show host Dr. Dahlia Wax of the Genesis Communications Network. Coming up next, two opposite points of view on the Biden budget and Senators Sinema and Manchin. You're plugged in to the Michael Harrison Wrap. Hey, fellow radio lover. C. Crane specializes in high-quality radios and radio-oriented audio products. Last week, I told you about C. Crane's CC Radio 2E. This week, it's C. Crane's SkyWave SSB. The SkyWave SSB with single sideband is the ultimate companion in emergency radio. It fits in the palm of your hand, weighs only 8 ounces, reception's excellent, and the audio is sharp and clear for its small size. The CC SkyWave SSB radio gives you access to important communications your smartphone's not capable of getting, like emergency single sideband transmissions which broadcast during a hurricane or after a major earthquake. You can also listen to your favorite AM and FM broadcasts, Weather Plus Alert, and ham radio operators from all over the world. The CC SkyWave SSB is the true radio lover's travel radio. Call C. Crane now to order the CC SkyWave SSB at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863, or you can visit C. Crane online at ccrane.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. Arizona has become a national political hotspot, both literally and figuratively. Let's check in now with one of the state's most influential broadcasters. He hosts the daily 5 to 7 p.m. show on our affiliate in Phoenix, KFNX. And he owns the station, too. His name is Bill Brady. Bill, a whole bunch of stuff is happening in Arizona. It's sort of like Georgia. It's one of the epicenters of American politics. You've got the budget debate going on. You have the audit just completed, and you even have climate change. Let's start real fast with a simple one, the existential one, climate change. How are you guys dealing with the heat there?
Interesting. We have 3 months of really intense heat. This year it was not as bad, because of something called the monsoon, where we get significant rain and cloud cover. And so this year we didn't have that same string of triple-digit days that we did in previous years. Those are the 3 months that where you get the higher temperatures. The rest of the year is actually mild to cold.
Really?
Somebody on Fox 10 this morning say, you know you've been in Arizona a while when you look at 72-degree temperatures and realize it's cold.
How about Senator Sinema?
You mean the enemy of democracy?
Well, what's the take on the ground there? You're a news talk station. You're predominantly conservative. This is an enigmatic situation, as described by observers. What's your take?
Well, Kirsten is a very shrewd politician and has managed to go from the state legislature to Congress to Washington, played a very influential role in the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And she has enormous support from Republicans. So her position in regard to the $3.5 trillion social infrastructure bill is very critical for her in Arizona and with her support from Republicans. She has far greater support from Republicans than the other Democratic Senator, Mark Kelly, does. by almost 4-1, and her approval ratings are relatively equal to his. But much of that support and approval comes from Republicans.
The Democrats are not so high on her, huh?
The fringe of the party, as you're seeing nationally in regard to the Squad and the progressive left, that's reflected in Arizona, too. They are threatening to hold a non-confidence vote in regard to Kyrsten Sinema in the event that she doesn't relent and support the $3.5 trillion social infrastructure bill.
I notice you say trillion in italics. You consider that to be high?
Oh, it's insane, especially on top of the $1.2 trillion bill and all of the COVID bills that were done in the last year. The money that we have added to the national debt is something that is going to follow us for a very, very long time. This is, no pun intended, just a bridge too far.
What about the audit? Now, that seems to have come to a conclusion. You don't hear much about it in the news anymore, but it doesn't seem to have fulfilled the goal that its instigators had hoped for. What's your take on the audit, and what's the buzz in terms of the talk community in Arizona?
Well, from a standpoint of the audit, I've always found elections officials to be first cousins to librarians. They really don't have an interest in the outcome. They just want to do it right. And in this case here, Adrian Fontes, who was our Maricopa County recorder, did a tremendous job in overhauling the elections office. They did a virtually flawless job in regard to the election. And the stuff that got cited was stuff that is easily explainable in the arcane detail of elections, such as duplicate names of voters. But the problem in this particular case is that the data that the audit was using didn't have the detail that was necessary to ferret out whether a duplicate name was actually a duplicate name. As a result, if the two parties were talking, that probably would have easily been resolved and never been an issue.
So where do you stand personally, or at least on the air when you do a show, on the whole issue of whether the 2020 election was stolen or whether this is just Trump bloviating?
Well, a good part of it is Trump bloviating, but I think the part that's gotten overlooked in this is that if you look back to 2020 and the lead up to the election, there was a free-for-all going on across the country, a lot of it tied to COVID, but where election rules and procedures were changed, and supposedly those can only be changed by an act of the legislatures in those states. But we had in Arizona, for instance, until the court stopped it, we had an extension of voting registration, during which time 30,000 additional voters were registered, which easily would swamp the margin of victory of Biden in the whole state of Arizona. But there were things like that happening across the country in terms of deadlines for ballots being received and signature matches and things like that. I think that was the bigger issue, and that never really has been something that, for lack of a better expression, has been audited and calculated as to what effect it could have had on the entire election. All of the emphasis went to the whole issue of fraud, as in the Maricopa County case, and there was no fraud.
That's Bill Brady, the talk show host at and owner of our affiliate in Phoenix, KFNX. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. We just discussed the Biden budget and United States Senator Kyrsten Sinema from the Republican perspective in Arizona. Now, let's head out to Portland, Oregon, to hear from one of the nation's leading progressive talk radio thought leaders on the same set of issues, nationally syndicated radio host Tom Hartman. What is the progressive point of view on the Biden budget, the way it's going, and particularly Senators Sinema and Manchin?
A few bad apples. It's like, you know, I guess every party has them. They're our version of Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz, I suppose. Joe Manchin started three coal companies. His son runs them now. He made $500,000 off them in dividends just last year. He has some very clear interests, and so when the bipartisan infrastructure legislation came to him, and he's not alone in this, they stripped out all the climate change provisions and or anything that would get us off fossil fuels. Kyrsten Sinema appears to be taking big bucks from wealth, from right-wing billionaires, from banks, from real estate ventures, or at least, you know, that seems to be what Open Secrets is implying. And she's more of an enigma. I mean, you know, she's gone from being a hard left green when she was first campaigning in Arizona. In fact, an Arizona talk show host who worked at a conservative station in Arizona called me up today on the air and talked about how she used to be able to just debate conservatives and eat their lunch on his show, and he would have her on, and you know, nobody wanted to debate her after a while because she was such a lefty and she was so good at it. And now, you know, it's not so much. And I'm just wondering, what is it that drives her? Is it that she wants to be famous? Is it that she wants to be rich? She grew up in poverty. Is it that she thinks that she's John McCain, only on the left? I don't think that shtick works on the left. I don't know. But it's a big problem for Joe Biden and for his legacy. And I think, you know, the thing we need to make clear is that almost 100% of the Democratic Party, you know, left, right, moderate, whatever, you know, right across the board, is in favor of this program that's going to, you know, strengthen America in so many ways and get us off fossil fuels. And you've got basically two senators who are threatening to blow it all up.
Do you think that the expenditure, if it does go through or comes close to it, will in fact stimulate the country out of the present economic uncertainty that exists for a variety of reasons? Or will there be the danger, and you and I have talked about this once before, you have an interesting take on it, will there be the danger of runaway inflation and destroying the economy, as some who are truly members of the right wing or the Republican Party have said?
Well, runaway inflation, that would be a joke. I mean, you know, there's two ways that inflation happens. One is if an essential commodity becomes scarce, like food in Zimbabwe. You know, you had food shortages, and that drove this huge inflation. Here in the United States in the 70s and 80s, it was oil. It was because of two Arab oil embargoes, and that drove inflation. The second way you get inflation is if you debase your currency by printing way more dollars than you have. The Treasury spending money is not printing money. The Fed is who prints money. And the Fed printed $20 trillion, you know, to respond to the 2008 Bush crash. So I don't think over a 10-year period, you know, $350 billion a year is even going to be a hiccup in terms of inflation. That's just a totally either bogus or badly misinformed, don't understand economics argument. The other thing is, you know, I'm just surprised that the Democrats messaged this so poorly. They're calling it a $3.5 trillion piece of legislation. The Trump tax cuts, if you extend them out over 10 years, are about $6.5 trillion. But they pitched it as a $1.5 trillion tax cut because they gave away $1.5 trillion in 18 months to rich people, you know, in the last year and a half of the Trump administration. And you know, but it's really, you know, in fact, you could say over a 20-year horizon, it's probably more than like a $10 trillion tax cut. So I don't know why they're not selling it as $350 billion a year, which is a drop in the proverbial bucket in terms of the federal budget.
Well, why do you think they're not? Do you think it's just that they're ignorant, or do you think they have some other plan in mind, or, you know, what do you
think? I think the Democrats are terrible at messaging, and the media got ahead of this and branded it without them having branded it first.
When you talk to your progressive audiences, when I say progressive audiences, I mean audiences that are tuning in because they generally agree with you. What are their concerns? What are they saying about Biden? What are they saying about the Pelosi and the party leadership?
I think the number one concern is that if Donald Trump becomes president in 2024, you can kiss our democracy goodbye. He's already said as much. And, you know, corrupting and politicizing the Justice Department, going after his political enemies, changing our media laws so that you can sue people for libel, for for doing what I and my conservative colleagues do on the radio every day, and then selectively enforcing them. He wants to turn America into what Viktor Orban has done with Hungary, and I think it's no coincidence that CPAC is meeting in Hungary next year. You know, Viktor Orban has become a dictator. He does not tolerate opposition. His opposition is in jail. All the major industries in Hungary are now owned by Orban cronies. Orban himself has become a billionaire now. And, you know, there's a real concern that if Biden doesn't have a big accomplishment this year, before the election really gets going, that Democrats aren't going to show up for the 2022 election. Republicans will. The House and Senate will be taken back by the Republicans. They will stop all the investigations into Trump's treason attempts and the January 6th thing. But more important than that, they will set the stage for a larger Republican takeover in 2024. That if it is a Trumpy takeover, if the Liz Cheney wing doesn't suddenly regain their ascendancy, really, genuinely, literally could mean the end of democracy in the United States. That's what people are freaked out about. They want Biden to have this win. Yeah, around the edges, it's going to help out America a little bit, right? It's going to make it cheaper to buy an electric car. It's going to make, if you're on Medicare, you'll be able to get dental and eyeglasses and hearing aids. If you're parents, you can send your kids to pre-K, for a lower cost. It's going to do stuff around the edges. But that's not make or break America. Make or break America is going to be, if the Democrats are seen as incompetent, impotent failures. And there's a very real possibility.
Do you think that that Trump has a chance of actually being president again?
Yeah, I do. I think he has a very good chance of being president again, particularly when you consider that 20 states have now changed the way that they handle elections. And 16 of those states are now basically getting in bed with the John Eastman memo, which was, let's go back to the election of 1876, where Sam Tilden won the majority of the popular vote, won the majority of the electoral college vote, but didn't end up president. Instead, Rutherford Hayes did, because the election got thrown into the House of Representatives, and there were more states supporting Hayes than Tilden in the House.
That's nationally syndicated progressive radio talk show host Tom Hartman. He's consistently among the top 10 in Talker's annual list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America, also known as the Heavy 100. Coming up next, a trip to the Big Apple and a deep dive into the problems of crime and homelessness with the extremely colorful GOP nominee for mayor of New York City, who happens to also be a successful talk show host in his own right. A conversation with the man in the red beret and the sateen jacket, Curtis Sliwa. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. Let's head into New York City and a conversation with the founder of a long-running and world-famous Big Apple-based public safety organization. Some call them vigilantes, but they're good guys. The Guardian Angels, who's also a major radio talk show host currently on leave from his job at WABC because he's the Republican nominee for mayor in the nation's largest city. The one and only Curtis Sliwa.
I have to tell you, the time I had lunch with you a number of years ago, I felt that I was having lunch with Spider-Man. I mean, you were in your sateen jacket and the red beret, and we were sitting in a restaurant, and people were coming by. Hey, Curtis. Hi, Curtis. People you didn't know. You are like a real-life superhero in New York, and I just think it's tremendous. One of the things I've enjoyed in my career in this business was just getting to know you. You are that original. And I find this next chapter in your career to be fascinating because I do believe you have a chance of winning. And even if you don't win, you still won. You're one of those candidates that, and I hope you understand that even if you don't win, the fact that you've come this far and you have this glorious history with the Guardian Angels and this fabulous history as a broadcaster in New York, and just as an individually colorful, unique citizen, I hope you understand in your heart that this, no way are you going to be defeated one way or the other. Do you realize that?
Oh, yeah. And again, another great iconic figure in broadcasting paved the way, Barry Farber, mm-hmm. who you could find overnights in New York City on WOR, WMCA. He actually ran for mayor.
He did.
Ed Koch. Did extraordinarily well.
Yeah.
He ran against Congresswoman Bella Abzug at that time, who was the fiery liberal progressive, the predecessor to AOC, all-out crazy Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's been done before, Michael. I know many of our colleagues have done it around the country. Larry Elder just finished his attempt to topple Pretty Boy Newsom. But it prepares you because it's retail politics. That's really what talk radio is. You develop a personal relationship with your listeners. This is what elected officials and those running for office fear. They don't want to get personal with the voters. They just want the 30-second sound bites. And when you're a talk radio show host, they know all about your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they've certainly learned that about me.
Yeah, there's no secrets. There's no skeletons going to pop out of your closet, hopefully, that already haven't. And we are in a new era when it comes to that anyway. And in this case, certainly, I don't think anything is going to, there are no surprises coming when it comes to Curtis Sliwa. The two biggest issues, as I see it, facing New York right now is crime and homelessness. Would you agree that those are two at the top? They may not be the only top issues, but they're certainly big ones.
Oh, absolutely. The city cannot fully recover unless we can create safe streets again, safe subways, safe parks, safe schools. And we saw that it was done by Rudy Giuliani, who has segued into talk radio magnificently here at WABC. But he took on David Dinkins, who was the predecessor to Bill de Blasio. In fact, he was his mentor. And when David Dinkins was mayor, we were averaging 2,000 murders a year, 5,000 shootings, most of them unresolved. And yet Rudy came in and completely turned it out around from the murder capital of America to the safest big city in America. And with that, an economic boom and an improvement in the public educational school system. You know, I've been endorsed by Rudy Giuliani, who has said, Curtis can do what I did, because he was side by side with me in helping me take back the city with his beloved Guardian Angels.
So how would it affect it? How would that be put into effect? Would there be a different kind of policing, different type of street connection with the community? How would we see under a Sliwa administration a change in terms of dealing with crime?
You know, it's not complicated. None of these issues. It's common sense, Michael. The first thing, I'm elected January 2nd. I'm not raising the roof. I'm not partying. I'm not going to Disney World like I just won the Super Bowl. I'm going to every precinct in the city and shaking the hand of every man and woman, 35,000 of them, who patrol, because their morale is at an all-time low. They need to know the mayor has their back, that they can go out there and do their job. And I'm going to tell them individually, I'm taking the handcuffs off of you. You go put them on the criminals. Now, don't cross the Maginot line. Don't abuse anybody's rights. And they all know that in my initial history as leader of the Guardian Angels in the first 13 years, from 1979 to 1992, I was arrested 76 times. I was given wooden shampoos, concrete facials, attitudinal readjustments. I was locked up in every jail in New York City, and my paperwork was lost. You can imagine what that was like. Oh, so when these elected officials talk about jails, incarceration, inmates being prejudiced against, and all they do is talk about inmates and not police and correctional officers, a guy who knows better, because I've been on the inside looking out and the outside looking in, I stand in defense of the police and the correctional officers, and the men and women, they know that. That's why they're going to go out there with a renewed capacity to take this city back. Whereas with my opponent, Eric Adams, he's been on the other side of the issue too many times where he's bashed police. And in that summer of 2019, where chaos and anarchy was taking place in our major urban areas, I was battling Black Lives Matter and Antifa with the Guardian Angels in the streets at times when they were looting and shooting and they were committing criminal acts, when the police were told to stand back by Comrade de Blasio, Mayor de Blasio. Eric Adams was out there painting Black Lives Matter in the streets with his friend and his Medici, Bill de Blasio, never once speaking up against the demonstrators. So my credibility was there in the streets of New York City, where I had my jaw broken, where I bled, where I'd been shot five times in my battles against the Gottis and the Gambinos in organized crime. I compare those credentials to my opponent's credentials, and I believe that the residents of the city of New York who choose to vote will say, yeah, Curtis Sliwa, well, he's going to keep us safe, because that's what I keep saying to everyone. Who do you think is going to keep you safe? Curtis Sliwa, who's been doing it for 42 years voluntarily, or Eric Adams, who is sort of a new, brand new convert to law and order, because finally the Democrats have woken up and said, without public safety, we cannot survive in this city and recover and resurrect ourselves.
All across the country, people are listening to this, and some of them obviously do not know you. When you mentioned your experiences last summer with Black Lives Matter, they may get the impression that you are sort of Trumpian in terms of your relationship with minorities. Let's clarify that, because from what I see, this is an unusual situation. You were tough on the looters, and you were tough on the rioters, and yet you do have a good relationship with the minority communities in New York.
Not just in New York, but in cities around the country where I have Guardian Angel chapters. Remember, we're in 13 countries, 130 cities, and the group is predominantly minority, mostly Black and Hispanic and Asian. So there's no doubt that I have the touch, but I'm telling you, if you're a criminal, you're Antifa and you're all white, or you're Black Lives Matter and you're predominantly Black, if you loot and shoot and you riot, and you don't demonstrate peacefully, well, then we're going to take you on, especially when the police were being told to stand back, as we saw not just in Minneapolis and in Seattle and San Francisco and Chicago and other major cities throughout America, but in New York City, where the mayor for 2 days, on June 1st and June 2nd of 2019, and many of your listeners now remember the images of thousands of young men and women pouring like locusts in a cornfield into Macy's Herald, the largest department store in America, in the gateway to America, Herald Square. And they were ripping off the plywood, which had been put up a day before when the mayor ordered the police to stand back. They knew what was coming. And the only ones between them and all-out anarchy and looting and shooting were the Guardian Angels of New York City. And I didn't just send them into the belly of the beast. I was out there leading them, swinging and winging, protecting property, protecting product, because as I was telling everybody, it's not about insurance. Why are you doing this over sneakers or apparel or jewelry? Just let them loot, because there's going to be insurance. I said, you don't understand. They first come for the property, then they come for the product, then they come for the people. And they've been coming for the people ever since. And unfortunately, our leadership has decided to have no bail. And we've defunded the police. We've rendered them impotent. And now we got to save our city. And I'm the person to do it, Michael.
In conclusion, what would you do upon becoming mayor about the homeless problem? I know that you have shown tremendous compassion to the homeless and to people who are emotionally disturbed in the streets. There are videos. There are hundreds of incidents of you intervening. I remember when the pandemic began, you were going out into the homeless areas of Grand Central Station, or Penn Station, rather, and helping people wash their feet. You weren't wearing gloves. You were brave. You faced the pandemic. You were like a nurse on the streets. But you're mayor now. How do we begin to make a dent in the homeless problem in New York City?
Well, I'll tell you, what you do is you go old school. There was a mayor many years ago in the Depression. His name was Fiorello LaGuardia. He created Camp LaGuardia way upstate in New York for single able-bodied men who had no negotiable skills, who were unemployed, who were living in shacks, many of them with alcohol addictions, and even some, even back then in the 30s, 30s with drug addictions. And they were removed upstate. They grew their own food. They managed a farm. They became self-sufficient. They were then taught job skills so that when they returned to New York City, they had negotiable skills as carpenters, plumbers, electricians. And most importantly, they dried out. There were no temptations upstate. The only temptation was to go cow tipping, but they didn't have access to alcohol or drugs. So they were able to get sober and straight and clean their mind out and breathe fresh air and have new clothes and then get a new start on life. Look, there are so many places in upstate New York now that are fallow, that are empty because people have just exited out of upstate New York. We can compensate those towns by setting up these camps, removing our single able-bodied men and women who are homeless as a result of problems with alcohol addiction or drug addiction and emotional issues. We can repair these human souls, bring them back into the urban area if they want to come back, and give them a chance to be able to get back on track. But we're not doing it now. All we have are shelters, as there are throughout America, in which it's basically a warehouse. You got to be in by 10 o'clock at night, and if you don't make curfew, you're out all night. Or if you happen to be sleeping in a homeless shelter, they kick you out the door at 7:30 with no services. So you continue to go out there. You're going into stores. You're shoplifting. You're stealing. You're robbing to feed your addiction. And you become a menace to society. And then people hate you and despise you. So government is a dollar short and a day late in dealing with this problem. And most importantly, has no compassion when dealing for the homeless. I'll never forget my father, who introduced me to talk radio, a merchant seaman for 55 years, who used to listen to the BBC late at night or out at sea and then do ship-to-shore radio with me. He said to me, "There by the grace of God go you, Curtis," when he would take me into the Bowery in the 60s, which is where the flop houses and the missions were. Now you would need a reverse mortgage just to pay for parking in the Bowery with all the hipsters and millennials. But as I looked at all these human men that were everywhere, he said, "There by the grace of God to go, you never laugh at them, never make fun of them, figure out a way to help them." And I would see him reach into his pocket and give money and buy food for them. He never just give them the money because obviously he knew it would go right into the bottle. And I learned so much from my father, who not only guided me in terms of becoming a listener in talk radio, but guided me in terms of being compassionate and realizing we're here for a purpose in life. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. It's not just to enrich ourselves, but it's to make other people's lives better.
That's the founder of the Guardian Angels, as well as being a legendary radio talk show host on Lee from his show at WABC, because he won the GOP nomination for the forthcoming mayoral race in New York City, Curtis Sliwa. The conversation you just heard was part of a longer conversation that I had with Curtis Sliwa that'll be posted this coming Tuesday on my podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview. You can hear it at mhinterview.com. That's this Tuesday at mhinterview.com. Curtis Sliwa is clearly one of the most colorful local talk show hosts in the history of radio. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, September 27th through Friday, October 1st, 2021. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor. That unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off.
in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in conjunction with Talkers Magazine and Talk Media Network. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.